A mentoring plan is required for all National Science Foundation proposals that include junior faculty. But what is good mentoring? National Science Foundation PIs Chris Rogers and Kristen Wendell sat down in January to talk about their unique perspectives on mentoring in order to share with others their advice as well as the challenges they have faced in mentoring. Wendell, a former mentee of Rogers, talks about what Rogers did that made their mentoring relationship work well. And as an assistant professor and now a mentor herself, she shares her struggles, questions, and approaches to mentoring her own graduate students. Rogers, as co-director of Tufts University's Center for Engineering Education and Outreach, brings decades of experience and lessons learned to this conversation.
One of the things that Kristen really taught me is that some of the best mentorship can happen by not being there. So by taking a risk and allowing the student to go down paths that he or she wants to do, by not micromanaging, by realizing that they do think differently than you, that they have different interests than you, but if you can enable their interests, you actually can get much more out of the project in the end than forcing them to go down your road or what you're interested in. So she's an excellent example of somebody who like everyone, takes a while to define what it is she was really, really interested in, but by giving her the space to do that and by enabling her to be able to go down that road and removing at least some of the roadblocks that the university will put into place. And also, I mean, the standard job of the mentor is after the thing doesn't work for the 10th time, you have to be able to say, yeah, well, try for the 11th. Mm-hmm. There's always a chance.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the biggest thing, is that not expect them to do the way you would have done it or to do what you would do, but to expect them to do it the way they want to do it, and then it's your job to figure out how to make that go in something that will actually benefit society.
That's probably really good advice for me as I start mentoring people to remember, because one of the strategies I'm trying to use is to show them how I approach solving a problem or accomplishing a task. But I'll have to remember, if they choose to use a totally different approach, that probably is a good thing for them in the end. I always learned so much from you by watching you do your work, and you were always so generous about letting us, like, tag along and be... I don't know if that was intentional or not.
It is, because you guys would throw out good ideas. It was to my advantage.
It was self-serving.
Exactly. Everything is self-serving.
But we got to be there when you had advisory board meetings, when you were meeting with people to think about putting grants together, and, I mean, even, like... Sometimes I think, like, budgeting for the center, or trying to do, strategic visioning, and what else? Also teaching, working with teachers, giving presentations around the world. So I got to watch you, and I always learn from you by watching you do your things. And I needed that at the beginning, and then I needed opportunities to find, you know, challenging work to do. And then I think as I went farther along, I needed help, like, balancing input from different people. So Chris was a mentor, but then I had other mentors and advisors too, and I feel like you kind of kept me grounded and thinking about how to balance different people's input.
It certainly is a big learning thing, I think, in graduate school, to learn that advice is just that, it's advice. You have the right to follow it or not, but it's your decision to follow it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the American education system, where so much of advice up until then is actually you follow the advice, or
right,
you don't pass the class.
Right.
That definitely takes some time to learn that skill.
Yeah, exactly. So I needed help with that for sure. Because I think there was a point in the middle of my PhD work where I was feeling overwhelmed by trying to check off all the boxes I thought I had to check off to, you know, make everyone happy, being the people pleaser that I am.
That's another thing I tried to mentor out of you, but didn't work.
Actually, I think you helped me with that. Like, think about what do I need to do to learn what I want to and need to learn, and what does the project need, and sort of keep those at the forefront. So I would advise people, if all of their, like, advising and mentoring professors are in the same department as them and sort of are somehow linked to be academic evaluators, maybe also find a mentor who's not linked academically to them. That might be helpful. The other thing that I needed at the beginning, I remember I thought about this last night, was a community, like, of people to learn from and learn with. And I don't know if that was intentional about your mentoring either, but, you know, putting me in an office with the other graduate students at the CEO and creating the CEO community with grad students and professors and visitors and postdocs and teachers, master teachers coming in, like, gave me a space to learn and explore, and that was invaluable. So I'm trying to think about that as I bring people in to be mentees. Like, how do I give them other people? Because I'm probably, yeah, they're probably not going to solve problems the way I do, so how do I give them access to other people?
Well, we're naturally a group-oriented species, right? We want to be appreciated by others. We want to fit in. So a group is a very powerful motivator, if nothing else. But the reason I love the groups is it's the group that I think pulls people in more directions, especially if you have a group of unlike-minded people. We tend to talk about like-minded people, but that's redundant. And get unlike-minded people, which we did. And when we started the center, there were engineers, there were education people. Mm-hmm. And that then pulls you in directions you wouldn't have thought of, which ends up in a better product. Plus, you know, you need at least 3 people aside for good Frisbee games.
So right.
At least 6
There's
people.
There's the Frisbee aspect of the community building, too.
Now, we actually started, many years ago, we started doing Friday Sport, which at first was everything from bowling to ice hockey to you name it.
Oh, I never knew there used to be variety.
Yeah, and it was fun, and you immediately start to get a sense of community and all. So that's where it's really strong is getting people to learn how to work as a team in the group. Yeah, one of the best examples I have of teaching mentorship, I think, is when my first child was young, very young, I changed his diaper, and somebody pointed out to my wife that I didn't change it the way I was supposed to, and my wife pointed out to that person right back that the kid was on my watch, and if I want the diaper to be in that configuration, so be it. That's the way the diaper's going to be, and that opened up a lot in my mind as to what good mentorship is, because if she had come back and said, no, you did it wrong, you have to do it this way, my first response was, okay, I'm not doing diapers.
Yeah.
Which would be a bad thing for her.
Yeah.
and instead, it empowered me to say, okay, hey, maybe I've got a new way of doing it. This is a better way. It was a better way. Reduce the diaper changing time by 2 seconds. So I use that model a lot with graduate students that when they come back and it's not the way I would have done it, but
take such, yeah.
Oh, it's not
discipline.
I mean, you know, a number of times I still said, well, I don't think that's necessarily a good idea.
It's not
like I was subtle about it.
Sometimes there's more subtlety than others. Yeah.
So I tend to err on the other side. I tend to say, go for it more often than not. Because inevitably, as long as you're willing to admit it's a failure and then redirect, it's not a problem, and it's an interesting thing to test out. Now, I have had students that then could keep on going down off this tangent, and it's really not getting anywhere to where a degree would be in that. Mm-hmm. But then it starts to become obvious to them as well. Mm-hmm. And you realize that, well, if I'm going to get a degree within a finite amount of time, I'll have to realign.
So you sort of help the students see that for themselves?
Well, one of the biggest issues that you went through, and actually most people went through, is most engineers don't have a good ability to come up with good, strong research questions. Mm-hmm. Research questions a mere mortal comes up with that hasn't done education research tends to be impossible to prove. And mm-hmm. so it's a big learning experience. How do you actually pick a research question that you can actually answer in a finite number of years? Mm-hmm. And so that's, there's a lot of cases of you guys coming up with questions and saying, well, maybe that might be tough to prove, but then letting you go down for a little bit and realize,
really
wow, I didn't think about this problem or that problem, and then you're much more interested and willing to reduce the scope of the question.
So do you have to, like, adjust your expectations for the timeline it takes to get things done? Okay. Because I think that's one thing I'm trying to learn how to do now, as I have mentees who I want to mentor and I want to help them grow in their careers and their learning, but they're also collaborating with me on projects
That have timelines. And that's tough. And there's a couple solutions I found that work well there. One is, you know, the Gantt chart, coming up with agreed upon milestones that you know that they're not going to hit, but at least you have something in place.
Okay.
Two is double the number of people to do the job, because that solves your problem a lot. And typically, that's not that expensive.
Yeah.
It can be with undergraduates and so on. And then three is always remember when you propose things that are smaller than that, you know that.
I'm trying to learn. That's helpful to hear. One thing I'm wondering about is what's finding out what's most important to the mentee, like where, and trying to figure out if they're sort of telling me what I want to hear or what they really need to tell me so that I can give them access to the resources they need. So that's a little bit of a challenge, but I don't know if that's mostly just gaining experience at mentoring and learning how to perceive and judge where people are and sort of their emotional state. I don't know what you would say about that.
And so you get much better when your kids go through those teenage years.
Yeah, because my kids right now, they pretty much wear their emotions on their sleeves.
I haven't had to get very
receptive. Yeah.
No, that is tough there, and I don't have great solutions for that. It takes, in my mind, it takes a lot of times just working side by side with them on the project. It takes arguing over lunchtime about ideas in the projects, and you just are continually looking for evidence that they really understand what they claim they're understanding, or that they have absolutely no clue. And
yeah, right. So now I'm thinking of another challenge is with mentees. As now that I'm a new mentor, is where's the? I just think about how Chris is so great at removing roadblocks so we could go and try to figure out how to do something, giving us access to people who knew how to do it that we could talk to, and then we'd learn so much by doing it ourselves. So I'm trying to do that, but I think I'm not, I don't know, it seems like I'm giving folks hard tasks, that it's like too big of a chunk. I'm giving them too big of a chunk to work on at one time. So I'm afraid of going too far in the other direction now of giving them too... I don't want to give too much step-by-step guidance because then they're not putting together the problem-solving process themselves, which is really what they need to learn how to do, right? So how do you think about that?
Yeah, it's sort of the how long do you throw them in the deep end before you explain how to swim?
Right.
And it varies from person to person. And usually groups can last in the deep end longer than individuals.
Yeah.
My approach has always been to throw people in and let them flounder more than most would, and then start to work with them. Because if you chunk it up too much, then they're starting to go down the path that you've already predefined.
Right.
If you give them more leeway, they're going to have more problems. And as you saw, I mean, there were all sorts of issues when you got started about there's so many different directions.
I do remember writing you this, like, I don't know if I ever sent it to you, but there was like a long letter document with like all the questions that you had or all the places where I felt overwhelmed. Because I was in the deep end at that point.
Yeah, and I mean, there's obviously there's times when you don't do it right. But I've found that failure is such an integral part of a better success that if you don't have those failures, then probably that where you finally end up is a lot shorter than what you could have done.
Do you talk to your peer colleagues about mentoring?
Not really.
Yeah.
That'd be socializing. It goes against the engineering creed.
Sure. But even in the education world, I don't think people really talk to each other about.
Certainly, problematic people we discuss all the time.
Yeah.
If there's real issues, but not in terms of tricks of getting success in the mentorship. My main advice is take risks. If you want good results, you're going to have to take risks. The bigger risk you take, the more chance you'll have of a good creative result.
You have said that, yeah, that is advice that you give often.
All the time.
But it applies to mentors. You're saying in particular when you're mentoring or seeking out a mentor, take risks. Yeah. Interesting. That's an interesting way to think about it.
Failure is good.
Yeah. It's a hard one to remember when you're in the tenure track process. Or a hard one maybe to play out, but important to think about. And this isn't necessarily advice, but this is another thing that Chris did. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but you've just always been supportive of our lives in general and positive. Whatever's going on, like getting married or having kids or joining a new gym, you know, whatever it is in the particular grad student life, I feel like you're positive about it and supportive.
Since you got married when I was in Switzerland. Thanks a lot.
Sorry for that. That's true. Sorry about that. Well, you're still supportive and excited about it. So and you ask about things, so that's helpful. I mean, I think that goes a long way in building the kind of relationship that is needed for someone to be able to go to you for advice or trust that when they're in the deep end, it's going to work out okay, you know? We're staying in there and trying to tread water for a little bit longer. Yeah. I'm thinking about Chris's advice to take risk and remember that failure isn't a really important part of learning. And I'm thinking about publications that I'm working on with graduate students and others that I mentor. And it would be good for me and my confidence about my tenure portfolio if those publications, you know, got accepted the first time. But that would probably mean a lot of input on my part, more step-by-step instruction, which wouldn't guarantee the acceptance of the publication, but maybe would give it a better chance the first time around. But if I give more step-by-step instruction and give the mentee less input, then they're not learning as much. But it feels like a risk for my, let's say, tenure portfolio, because that might be a publication that isn't ready by the time I put forth my portfolio. And so I think what I should remember is to trust in the other outcomes of that mentoring relationship that are going to balance, you know, if there's a publication that isn't ready because the mentee needed more time to learn about how to do it, there's probably some other outcome of the mentoring relationship that's going to be fruitful for the tenure portfolio. That's what I'm telling myself anyway. So I think there's probably a tension in that philosophy of giving mentees who work for you, who collaborate with you, because that's the kind of mentoring relationship we've been talking about today, is mentoring relationships where you also work together and collaborate on projects. Anyway, so there's tension. If you're in a tenure track pathway, giving mentees the space and time to fail and also getting ready what you want to have ready by the time you go up for tenure.
I guess the only other thing I would stress is the difference between research in Bell Labs and the research in a university. I think the biggest difference is in Bell Labs, everybody that was there got there. They were outstanding researchers already in the university. Half of our researchers are not outstanding researchers when they start. They have no idea what research is like. They are fresh out of undergraduate. Which can make them great because they have no preconceived notions. But it also means that it's going to take longer, and there are going to be more failures and more fresh starts to get the thing to work. And so if we start looking at universities as places that are going to push the research agenda of the country, that's fine, as long as we're willing to realize that our main job as head researcher is not to get the research to happen, but it is to get the next generation to learn how to do research.
When I was writing a mentoring plan for my career grant proposal, right, I guess you have to have a mentoring plan. Anytime now you're proposing to have a postdoc supported by an NSF grant. And to write that, I thought about the fact that this postdoc would be preparing for the kind of job I have now, you know, an early career assistant professor. Most likely, that's what the postdoc would be going for. And so the three main things I have to think about are my research program, the courses I'm teaching, and the various kinds of service around the community, including my university. And so how could I structure some experiences where I could help the postdoc develop in those three areas. So I looked at my postdoc mentoring plan last night, actually, and it just sort of says, here's the kinds of experiences I'll be sure to try to give my postdoc in teaching and how I'll provide feedback, and here's the kinds of experiences I'll be sure to try to give my postdoc in proposing research projects and how I'll give feedback, and then experiences in writing papers and how I'll give feedback. So I just try to sort of formalize the kinds of areas where I might let someone jump into the deep end in writing papers and proposing and teaching, and then where I would come back around and rescue them and give them feedback. So that's one way. I think at the time I wasn't using that language of where will the deep ends be, but now that I look back at it, that's kind of what I was doing in those three buckets of work. And then, right, so once I had it written for the proposal, when I was looking to hire a postdoc, I used that document to, as it was written, to say, here's how I would imagine our working relationship, and here's the kinds of experiences I hope this position will provide, and what I would commit to giving you in terms of experiences and feedback. And it was really helpful to have that already written down. And now looking at it is a good check on how we're doing, and I think I'm actually going to use it as we meet over the next few weeks. Sort of, we're coming up on just sort of a good benchmark in the project, so I think it'll continue to be useful. Closing thoughts for me. I mean, Chris gave us the chance to write proposals to see the mechanisms of how things work and putting together growing a center and putting together research proposals and putting together conferences and symposiums and sending us all around the world. And so giving us opportunities, yeah. It's been really an important part of your mentoring.
Thank you for joining us for this podcast on mentoring. CADRE is the National Science Foundation's DRK-12 resource network. Please visit our website at cadrek12.org for more information about Rogers and Wendell's work, as well as related National Science Foundation-funded projects.